Cantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents When the Yellow Mocker Calls by Lila M. Beckham, narrated by Krista Lewis. Foreword. I was blessed to grow up in a family of storytellers, and when they talked about the days of yore, describing what it was like when they were children and telling stories about their youthful adventures with their brothers, sisters, and cousins, and told stories about their parents and grandparents, I realized they were talking about my family, my aunts and uncles, grandparents and great-grandparents. I could have sat there for hours and listened. Many times I did and then begged for more. I wanted to know these people. I pictured them in my mind as I listened, and when the story ended, I wondered about the things they didn't talk about, didn't describe. What were their lives like before my parents and grandparents were born? Although I admired my father and his brother's storytelling ability, they lacked details past the crux of their own childhood memories. On the other hand, my maternal grandmother, May, who was born in 1904, was the family historian on Mama's side of the family. She knew things from way back. She knew the lineage of her and Grandpa's family back to the mid-1800s. And could easily name these people from memory. At least 5 generations worth, maybe more. She's gone now. Been gone since 1986, but her knowledge of her family's history inspired me to learn more about them. And I wanted to know about my father's side of the family. Since her departure, I've dedicated many hours researching, verifying names and records, digging through censuses, military documents, wills, etc., walked through cemeteries and jotted down dates and information. During this process, I've compiled an extensive family tree. Many of the stories I'd heard and the names given me were accurate right down to the T. The story I'm telling in this book is from my father's side of the family. It is about his maternal great-grandmother and her family. These partly Indian ancestors on my father's side of the family had many strange beliefs and some odd superstitions. They freely spoke of ghosts, animal and human spirits that roamed the earth years after they'd departed in death. They freely spoke of the existence of unexplainable, dare I say, supernatural occurrences and the connections between the living and the spirit world. And while some of the adventures in this book actually occurred, others were intricately weaved with the visions I had of how their lives were as I traveled with them via census records, wills, deeds, and military documents. Many of the folks in this book actually existed over 100 years ago. They were my kinfolk. Their physical descriptions come from fading photographs and wartime documents. Their manner of speech drawn from the stories told by my ancestors. Some characters are fictitious, plucked from the thin air of imagination as I rode in a wagon along the dusty roads and trails of the early 1800s, while listening to family storytellers. Any resemblance to actual people is purely coincidental. This book is meant for entertainment purposes only and should not be taken to heart as being factual in all its contents. However, the telling of this story is my way of honoring those folks that came before me. I hope you all enjoy listening to their story as much as I enjoyed writing it. The author, Semmes, Alabama, March 2016. 1. The Watershed, Spartanburg District, South Carolina, October 1829. Groaning in relief, the young girl squatted behind a huckleberry thicket and emptied her bladder. The tart odor of pine straw saturated with urine filled the air around her. Inhaling deeply, she smiled, not so much from the aroma of the urine, but from the other scents in the crisp October air. Waking along the watershed usually meant another bland beginning to an uneventful day. Most days, the young girl whose name was Charity hated getting out of bed in the mornings. She preferred to lie in bed a few minutes, moaning, groaning, and stretching before getting up, especially once the weather began to turn cooler the way it had in recent weeks. However, that early October day in the year 1829, 14-year-old Charity sprang out of bed like a jackrabbit ready to run a race. Something special was going to happen that day. She knew it as surely as she knew her own name, However, she'd also been having a nagging pain in her innards that foretold a warning of some sort, a premonition that everything was not as it seemed. Hesitating a moment because of another of those nagging aches in her belly, Charity stopped mid-stride to question her feelings before going into the kitchen to start breakfast for her and her grandfather. Her grandparents had always told her that she had a gift of knowing, and that she needed to hone in on those feelings when they came to her. When alive, her grandmother, Methebe, possessed the same gift. Methebe was a full-blood, a Cherokee, the daughter of Shooting Arrow, shaman of the bird clan of the South Carolina Mountains north of Savannah. The English words for her grandmother's name was Shadowy Moon. After stoking the fire, Charity placed a few pieces of bacon in the frying pan and set it on the grate above the fire, then stepped outside the old log cabin to go to the toilet. Taking a deep breath of the cool, fresh mountain air, Charity bent over and stretched her back to remove the stiffness she felt from sleeping in her not-so-comfortable bed. Her bed consisted of a cot with a straw-ticked mattress atop a wooden bunk that seemed to become flatter and harder every year she grew older and heavier. Her grandfather had built the log cabin some 50-odd years earlier as a wedding gift for Methebe. The bunk and mattress were made for the girl child that came along some years after they became husband and wife in a tribal ceremony with all of Shadowy Moon's clan members in attendance. Since clanship is matrilineal, Shadowy Moon's mother and oldest brother served as representatives, and because her grandfather could not be represented by his mother, which was Cherokee custom, a kindly elder of the clan represented him. First, the couple exchanged foodstuffs, a venison ham from him, symbolizing his intention to keep meat in the house, and an ear of corn from her, which symbolized her intention to be a good Cherokee wife. Afterward, the wedding party danced and feasted for hours. The priestess of the clan then blessed the sacred spot chosen for the ceremony for 7 consecutive days. Once that had been done, the bride and groom then approached the sacred fire. They were wrapped together in a blue blanket, sung to and blessed by the priestess, as was all in attendance. Once the priestess was satisfied that all was well, the blanket was removed and they started their lives together. The girl child born to them was Charity's mother, Gigesti. Charity's mother had been named Gigesti because of the violet color of her eyes. Being the daughter of an Englishman and a Cherokee squaw, Gigesti had been a raven-haired, violet-eyed beauty that turned the head of many a young brave. It wasn't long before she caught the attention of a handsome young brave named Ugug Uzdi. Ugug Uzdi was an old name that meant little owl. Charity could not remember her parents at all, but often wondered what her life would have been like if they had lived through the yellow fever epidemic that occurred when she was only 3 years old. As she grew older, Charity also wondered why she, a small and weak child, lived, and her strong, grown-up parents died. Nokomis, the Cherokee name she called her grandmother, had always told her that her parents died because it was the wish of the Great Spirit that they join him in his home in the sky. However, her grandmother's reply did not satisfy her question. She did not feel that saying they died because it was the wish of the Great Spirit was a real answer to her question. When her grandmother passed away, Charity watched her for an hour, hoping to see her spirit leave her body to travel to the Great Spirit's home in the sky. When her grandfather noticed her waiting and watching, he asked her what she was doing. When she told him, he said that her grandmother's spirit had left and gone into the Great Spirit's home in the sky the moment she died.
"Our spirits leave us as soon as we pass away, child. The spirit cannot exist in a body that ain't breathing."
His voice broke slightly before he turned and walked outside. Now that it was just her and Grandpa left, it was a little lonely for her. Charity loved her grandfather, but she missed her grandmother something fierce. She missed her grandmother's scent, her storytelling as they did chores. She missed her cooking, too. And although she was excited about leaving it, she loved her home. It was the only home she'd ever known. Going into town with her grandfather to get supplies would be the first time he had ever let her accompany him on one of his bi-yearly trips, and it would be the very first time she had ever left the cabin for an overnight excursion. She wondered if he wanted her to go with him because he was getting old. Maybe he just wants me to learn the way of his people, the white men, thought Charity. After all, he had told her that she could not wear her buckskins and that she had to wear the cotton dress he'd given her a few months earlier. The dress came from the trading post across the river near the Cherokee settlement of Brownstown. He'd traded some pelts for it. Charity did not like the way the dress felt against her skin. The material was thin and light. It hardly felt as if she had anything on. At first she balked at wearing it, but finally gave in because she wanted so badly to go with him. Wiping the thoughts from her head, she decided that she was not going to worry about all of that dressing in dresses and stuff. Not today. Today she would get to go on a real adventure. She would see and maybe even get to talk to other people. Not that she didn't enjoy her conversations with her grandfather, but she wanted to meet other people and have conversations with them, too. Besides her grandmother and grandfather, and the occasional visitor they had from Brownstown come to the cabin, she'd never talked to anyone. Many times in the last year or so, since her grandmother's passing, Charity had wondered what it would be like to be around other people. Life in the hills of South Carolina in 1829 was not an exciting life for a young teenage girl. Just before she stood from behind the huckleberry bush, a yellow-bellied mockingbird lit in it. It stared at her for a moment, its beady dark eyes burning into hers, before it uttered a noisy complaint and then flew away. The only bird that had ever come that close to her was the small hummingbirds that came in the summertime. A chill ran through her as she stood and made her way back inside to finish fixing their breakfast.
"Are you ready to accompany this old man to town?" asked her grandfather when she walked back inside.
She smiled her acquiescence and patted his shoulder. He reached up a rough, age-spotted hand to pat hers, and then said,
"We'd better get to moving if we're going to make it to Eli's before dark."
"Who's Eli, Grandpa?"
"Eli's an old friend of mine. He stopped by here to visit once. You weren't knee-high to a grasshopper at the time, so that's probably why you don't remember him. I've known Eli his whole life. Me and his father Henry came to these hills over 60 years ago."
"He must live a long ways," mumbled Charity, wondering why he'd only visited once.
"Nah, not that far at all,"
her grandfather responded.
"No more'n about 20 miles down the Savannah. I usually stop off over at his place on my way to and from Fort Charlotte. Sometimes Eli goes down there with me. When he's in need of supplies, or his woman is in need of cloth or other womanly things."
Mumbled Charity. She knew what he meant by women things. She had found out about a woman's curse the year before when she had come of childbearing age, as her grandmother called it. After finishing up their quick breakfast of leftover biscuits and the bacon she fried, they finished loading the wagon and were driving away from the old cabin by the time the sun was coming up. Charity never looked back as they drove away. She was more interested in what lay ahead than what she was leaving behind. Besides, they'd be back in less than a week, or so she thought. The first few miles of the trip were uneventful. Both were quiet, each with stuff other than talking on their minds. Even if there had been something new and beautiful to see, Charity's mind was so full of wondering about where they were going and who she might meet that she did not notice anything. She did not notice the beautiful multi-hued mountains or the lush green valleys, the tall willowy birch trees, or the assortment of animals that watched them pass by. About noon, they stopped to stretch their legs and eat some of the bread and venison they'd brought with them from home. They had both been quieter than was their usual on this journey, both lost in their own thoughts and concerns. After they climbed back onto the wagon and traveled another few miles in silence, Charity startled her grandfather when she suddenly spoke. He had to ask her to repeat what she'd said.
"I ask you what they're like, Grandpa."
"What who's like?"
"Your friends, the ones you said we are going to see."
"Well,"
said Grandpa, hesitating,
They are a lot like us, I reckon. About 20 years ago, Eli married a woman named Nancy. Yeah, it was at least that long ago. They have one son still a-living. He's about your age, maybe a year older. His name is Henry. Eli named him after his father, my friend Henry,
added her grandfather, reminding her of what he'd already told her.
How about your friend Henry? Where is he?
Well, he died a couple years back,
her grandfather replied. Charity could hear the sadness in her grandfather's tone.
Oh, I'm sorry, Grandpa. That's sad. Why did he die?
Old age, I reckon.
Like when Nokomis died. She was old.
Yeah, sort of like that, child. We get old, and we die.
When her grandfather said that, the way he said it, she knew right then that he was feeling his age, and probably fearing that he, too, was about to die. He was trying to get her settled somewhere before that happened.
Is that why you wanted me to come along?
She asked, giving him a direct look.
Huh?
Her grandpa questioned, acting as if he didn't hear what she said. She knew there wasn't anything wrong with his hearing. He heard real well most of the time. She could never slip anything by him.
Are you taking me to Fort Charlotte because you think you're not going to be around much longer?
When he did not immediately respond, she asked,
Are you trying to get me married off or something?
Well, now that you mention it,
said Grandfather.
I don't want to get married, Grandpa, Charity exclaimed. I want to stay with you and take care of you the way you took care of me all these years.
Well, that really ain't up to you. It ain't up to me either. You see, your mama, she must have known she wasn't going to be around when you come of age. She must have knew that. Me and your grandma wouldn't be either. She gave you your name, and a good Christian name at that. My own mama's name, who was her grandmama. She said that with your blue eyes and fair skin, you ought to have a white woman's name. I think she hoped that one day you could pass for a white woman. She wanted you to have a better life than what the Indians had.
Is that why you put me in this dress and told me that I couldn't wear my Asani, Grandpa?
Uh-huh. It is,
he responded, never taking his eyes off the trail.
Injuns ain't looked upon too fondly in most places. Your Cherokee name, given to you by your father, was Sahani. Do you remember your grandma telling you all of that?
Yes, Grandpa, I remember. I remember everything Nokomis taught me. Sahani means blue. He named me that because of the color of my eyes.
Yeah, that's right. But we always called you by your Christian name, Charity. Your mother and grandmother insisted on it. She could see into the future, you know,
he said.
Uh-huh, Charity mumbled.
My friend Eli knows you are 3/4 Indian. That don't bother him none. We done talk about this, and we both agreed that maybe you and his son Henry will hit it off and want to marry.
After she did not respond, a sideways glance from her grandfather let her know that he noticed her silence. He continued his discourse after pulling off to the side of the trail so they could stretch their legs again, use the bathroom, and eat a bit more of the venison. Charity was quiet, and although she got the blanket and basket out of the wagon and served her grandfather his food, she herself only drank a few sips of water. Her abstention from food and drink did not go unnoticed by her grandfather.
I just want what's best for you, child. If it means me giving up my last year or so on earth, then so be it. It's what has to be done. I may not last another year. This could be the last chance I get to see to it that you are settled somewhere and taken care of,
he said firmly. Charity did not respond to her grandfather's spew of thoughts. Her mind was in turmoil. Both were quiet as they gathered up their blanket in the food basket. Soon they were back in the wagon and back on the trail. Her heart felt heavy in her chest as she sat beside her grandfather, looking dead ahead. Although sitting quietly, Charity's mind was racing a mile a minute. How Grandpa can do this is beyond me. Why did she feel as though she had no choice in what was going to happen, even though it was happening to her? Silently, she pleaded in her heart that her grandfather would change his mind and take her back home with him.
What if this Henry feller doesn't like me, Grandpa? She asked suddenly. What if Eli and his wife don't like me either? She asked, thinking to herself that she could easily make them not like her just by being rude and ugly. She could do that, even though it would cause her grandfather embarrassment.
Charity didn't want to embarrass her grandfather or to hurt him either, but she wanted to go back to the cabin with him, not stay with complete strangers.
If they don't like me, can I go back home with you? Charity asked.
Nope, he replied firmly. If young Henry doesn't take a liking to you, I'm sure some young buck down in Fort Charlotte will. They're always looking for wives down there.
Charity did not speak, but she didn't have to. Her grandfather could tell that she was mad about what he had said.
You look madder than an old wet setting hen, said her grandpa. I swear, young'un, I can almost see the smoke a-spewing out of your ears.
He chuckled to himself and then said,
You keep that up. We'll look like we're hauling a tar kettle with us. You need to get yourself straightened up before we get to Eli's house. I would a lot rather see you married to young Henry than to some young buck I know nothing about.
Charity thought about jumping off the wagon and running back home, but she didn't want to leave her grandpa. The last time she snuck a look at him, she noticed that he didn't look so good. He was pale, and his skin looked clammy.
Are you all right, Grandpa?
She asked, as sudden concern for him overwhelmed her thoughts.
Yes, child, I'll be fine,
her grandfather replied.
I'm just getting too dang old for this long trip into town. These old bones of mine ache to high heaven. I can't handle riding in a wagon all day like I used to. Heck, if I remember right, I'm nigh on 82 years old. Be 83 come December, he said thoughtfully.
A sudden, awful aching in Charity's heart almost took her breath away. She looped her arm around her grandfather's and held on for dear life. She didn't know what she would do or how she was going to survive without anyone she knew around. 2. Eli's. The sun was low in the sky behind them before her grandfather spoke again.
We ought to be at Eli's cabin after another mile or so,
he said.
We'll get there just in time for some of Nancy's good cooking. No disrespect meant, but I'm tired of eating your and my cooking. I always look forward to visiting with them.
He chuckled.
I never told your grandma this, but I'll tell you, that Nancy, she sure can cook. Her cooking is better than anyone else's cooking I've ever eaten. Even your grandma's. Of course, your grandma didn't know nothing about Injun cooking when I married her, which I ain't a-saying is a bad thing.
Do they know we're coming?
Interrupted Charity.
They ought to know, or at least know that I'm coming,
he replied with a sideways glance.
I've come through here about this time of year for the past 50-some-odd years. And the last 20 of those I've stopped right here at Eli and Nancy's place.
When they topped the next hill, Charity saw gray smoke rising from the chimney of a small cabin situated in a valley a half a mile below. As they neared the cabin, she caught herself holding her breath in anticipation of the unknown. When they were within a quarter mile of the cabin, an old yellow dog came out from under a cedar tree and started barking at him. The front door of the cabin popped open, and a tall man with gray hair came and stood in the entrance. That must be Grandpa's friend Eli, thought Charity. A small woman whose dark hair was pulled up off her shoulders and twisted into a bun appeared behind him. And that must be Nancy, thought Charity. Her grandfather waved, and they waved back. When they arrived at the front of the cabin, her grandfather pulled the horses to a halt, set the brake, and then got down off the wagon. He turned and reached his hand up to help her off the wagon. Charity was so nervous that when the dress she was wearing caught on the brake lever, she almost tripped and fell over the side of the wagon. Her grandfather caught her, and landed her firmly on the ground. As soon as her feet touched the earth, a strange sensation swirled through her. She had the sudden feeling that she would be there for a very long time. When she came to herself, she looked around for her grandfather. He had already walked toward his friends. She saw him shake Eli's hand and exchange hellos. She wished she could hear what they were saying, but they were talking quietly. No matter how hard she strained her ears to hear them, she couldn't understand what they were saying. It seemed as though hours had passed since she had gotten down off the wagon when, in fact, it had only been a couple of minutes at the most. The gentle tone of a woman's voice finally penetrated her concentration enough to draw her attention from her grandfather and Eli's quiet conversation. "Hello, dear. You must be Robert's granddaughter, Charity. We've heard so many wonderful things about you," exclaimed the woman. "It would have been really nice to hear about y'all, too, especially before today," thought Charity. She wanted to stomp her foot in rebellion and run home as fast as she could. However, she had been taught her manners while growing up, and she was brought up to be polite to folks. Therefore, she swallowed her fear and irritation and smiled back at Nancy. "Yes, ma'am, I am Charity," she replied, standing as straight and tall as her 4-foot-10-inch frame would allow. When she was younger and acted surly, her grandfather always told her, "Just because you live out in the wilderness doesn't mean you have to act like a heathen. Wild Injuns don't even act that way."
"I'm Nancy," said the woman. "I'm Eli's wife. We were looking forward to having you in our family. It will be nice to have another female presence around. I've lived in a house full of men so long that I've almost forgotten what it's like to have another woman in the household." She liked being called a woman instead of a child. Again, she smiled at Nancy. Charity had to look up at the woman to see her face. That was when she realized that, even though the woman had appeared small when standing in the doorway beside her husband, she wasn't so small after all. She had to be almost a foot taller than Charity was. She was the tallest woman Charity had ever seen. She didn't take into account that besides her grandmother, Nancy was the only woman she had seen. At least, that she remembered. About that time, another figure appeared in the doorway of the cabin. "That must be Henry," thought Charity. The young man smiled toward her grandfather and said, "Hello, Mr. Robert. It's good to see you again." He had a slow, gentle voice, like his father. It was pleasant to the ear. Charity could not take her eyes off the young man as he walked over to where her grandfather and his father stood. When he came face to face with her grandfather, he extended a hand and shook hands with him just as his father had done. Henry wasn't quite as tall as his father was. He was maybe about the same height as her grandfather. His thick, dark hair was the color of his mother's. His eyes were gentle and dark-colored like his father's. When he smiled at her grandfather, she noticed that he had a beautiful smile and a dimple on the side she could see. She wished that he would look at her and smile at her the way he had at her grandfather. "It's like he don't even know I'm here." Nancy's voice finally penetrated her concentration and pulled her focus off Henry. She turned to look up at her. It was then that she realized that Nancy was speaking directly to her. Her face turned pink with embarrassment. "I'm sorry, ma'am. I didn't hear you," she stuttered. "There is no need to be embarrassed. Everything must be overwhelming, especially with this being your first trip away from home. Just relax. Everything will be fine. Would you like to freshen up before supper?"
"Oh, yes, ma'am. I'd love to," Charity replied quickly.
"If you don't mind," she added shyly.
"Not at all. Follow me inside and I'll show you where everything is."
As she followed Nancy toward the cabin, Charity turned to look over her shoulder. The men were still standing, talking quietly. The boy, Henry, was watching her intently. When their eyes met, her breath caught in her chest. Looking at him straight on, she could see that he was a very handsome fella. It sort of surprised her because there was nothing remarkable about his mother's and father's appearance other than their height. Watching the slip of a girl follow his mother toward the cabin, Henry thought that she must be an Injun child from one of the villages.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?